The Democratic presidential candidates are gearing up for Tuesday's debate in Iowa, and the field is getting smaller.
With Cory Booker's departure from the race, there are now 12 candidates who are still running 3 weeks before the Iowa caucuses.
Plus, President Trump's immigration policy has focused on a key pledge.
The wall is something that really resonates with President Trump's base and voters, and they see it as sort of a symbol not only of keeping the bad people out of the country, as they view it, but of a president keeping his promise.
But has the wall been effective in reducing illegal border crossings? We'll have the details. It's Monday, January 13th. This is the PM edition of What's News from the Wall Street Journal. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli in New York. Iran is warning protesters not to stage more anti-government demonstrations. As we mentioned this morning, protests broke out in the country after the Iranian military admitted that it had unintentionally shot down a Ukrainian passenger plane last week, killing all 176 people on board. Video of the protests this weekend appeared to show security forces using tear gas. Tehran's police chief denies that his forces opened fire to control the protests, saying police had acted with self-restraint, according to Iran's semi-official news agency. The U.S. is calling last month's deadly shooting at a Florida naval base an act of terrorism. Authorities say a Saudi aviation student opened fire in a classroom at the Pensacola base, killing at least three people and injuring eight others. The U.S. is now expelling 21 Saudi military students from a training program as an FBI investigation continues. U.S. Attorney General William Barr said the other cadets, though not involved in the shooting, possessed child pornography or had social media containing jihadist or anti-American sentiments. The U.S. Treasury Department plans to drop its designation of China as a currency manipulator ahead of this week's signing of Phase 1 of their trade accord. The label had been applied last August. Under the new agreement, China will commit to making more disclosures about its foreign exchange practices and agree not to depress its exchange rate. Oscar nominations were announced earlier today, with Joker, an origin story of the Batman nemesis, taking the lead with 11 nominations, including Best Picture, Best Director, and Best Actor. The films 1917, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, and Martin Scorsese's Netflix release The Irishman were close behind, with 10 nominations each. Netflix made a strong showing overall with 24 nominations, but debate continues over a lack of racial and gender diversity in the Oscars, especially in high-profile categories. Little Women racked up 6 nominations, but Greta Gerwig was overlooked in the director's category. Another big name dropped out of the 2020 presidential race today. New Jersey Senator Cory Booker has ended his bid for the White House. Booker was lagging in national polls and had failed to qualify for 2 consecutive Democratic primary debates, including tomorrow's in Iowa. Joining me now with more details, Wall Street Journal reporter Ken Thomas. Ken, what can you tell us about the Democratic field heading into Iowa?
Sure. So with Cory Booker's departure from the race, there are now 12 candidates who are still running 3 weeks before the Iowa caucuses. And Booker's departure speaks to a split that we've seen in the field between the leading contenders like Joe Biden and Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren, Pete Buttigieg, and then a group of long shots who haven't been able to qualify for the debates. Iowa is really tight right now. Recent polls have shown Bernie Sanders, Joe Biden, Elizabeth Warren, and Pete Buttigieg essentially tied. They're all competing for the lead. And Amy Klobuchar, the Minnesota senator, is not far behind and trying to make a late surge into the lead. Looming in the backstage, though, is Michael Bloomberg, the billionaire former New York City mayor. And he has said he's been willing to spend whatever it takes to win the nomination. And he's targeting a bunch of March primary states. And so he could be a real factor if the field is fractured 6 weeks from now.
And we have to talk about another big wild card here, that being impeachment. Depending on when the Senate begins its trial, that could impact several of the Democratic presidential hopefuls here.
This is a big wild card for the senators who are in the race, Elizabeth Warren, Bernie Sanders, Amy Klobuchar, and Michael Bennett, the Colorado senator. All of them are watching closely for the details of when this impeachment trial will begin and how much of January they're likely to lose in terms of campaigning. The discussions have centered around a trial that would be held about 6 days a week. So that leaves little time if you're a senator hoping to make a last-minute charge in Iowa. And the question is whether this gives people like Joe Biden and Pete Buttigieg an advantage in Iowa during the final weeks, that they'll have the state essentially to themselves. And for the senators, they're going to have to be creative and try to use surrogates and other ways of reaching their voters. But it raises this real question of whether not being in Iowa in the final weeks, if that will harm your ability to actually win the state.
Wall Street Journal reporter Ken Thomas joining me from Washington. Thank you so much, Ken.
Thanks.
The border wall has been a centerpiece of President Trump's immigration policy. And last week, the administration celebrated a big milestone, completion of the wall's 100th mile. But while the wall might be the most visible symbol of the president's immigration policies, experts say other measures have done more to stem illegal migration across the southern border. Joining me now is Wall Street Journal reporter Michelle Hackman. Michelle, building a border wall was a key campaign pledge for Trump during 2016. And as we begin the fourth year of his presidency, how much has been accomplished on that front, building the wall?
You know, Trump has been really slowed down in building his wall. I mean, first, Congress, even though we had a Republican Congress for the first 2 years of his presidency, Congress didn't give him any money for the wall, and that became a huge fight. And if you'll remember, we actually shut down the government for 35 days last year over a fight about funding the wall. And in the end, they gave him a little money. The administration didn't feel like it was enough. They declared a state of emergency and actually took money from different parts of the military to begin construction. So construction really only began last year. It's been halting. Courts, you know, have intermittently said that they weren't allowed to use certain amounts of the money that they were trying to use. And now some of those restrictions have been lifted. And so to date, the administration has built, you know, as I say in my story, about 100 miles of this wall prototype that they really like. It's this, you know, these 30-foot really thick square bollards placed a couple of inches apart from each other. So, you know, theoretically tough to scale. They're see-through, so the Border Patrol can sort of see what's coming on the other side. But the issue is that they are still facing this other issue of, you know, taking the land that they need to build the wall. And so those 100 miles are built almost entirely in areas where some kind of barrier or fencing already existed. And so the administration is still really struggling to build wall in areas where there sort of is no fence, there is no wall at this point.
You were actually in Yuma, Arizona for an event to mark the 100th mile of border wall. Tell us what that was like.
You know, it was like a celebration. It was almost like a campaign event. You can tell that the wall is something that really resonates with President Trump's base and voters, and they see it as sort of a symbol not only of keeping the bad people out of the country as they view it, but of a president keeping his promise. You know, he made this promise. It was unpopular in Washington, and he stuck to his guns, and he's building the wall. And so it did really feel like it was sort of an advertisement in that sense.
But you did speak to experts who are divided on how effective building the wall has been in stemming illegal immigration. What did you hear from them?
Yeah, so it's interesting. You know, a wall, in this case, we're talking about, again, about a 30-foot tall fence, does have some deterrent effect. You know, it's you have to take time to scale it. You have to find a way to go around it. And so if you are someone who's looking to evade capture, you know, that it's an impediment that slows you down. But the issue here is that for the past few years, the real issue of, you know, many of the people coming up across the border are not necessarily folks who are looking to evade capture, but asylum seekers, people who are coming here and saying, I need humanitarian protection. And those people are actually, I mean, they are looking to surrender to the first Border Patrol agent they find. And so if there's a wall and they have to scale it, it doesn't matter if they get caught. And so in that sense, it's not quite as effective.
Many point to some other policies, these so-called invisible barriers, that have actually been more effective in reducing illegal immigration into the United States.
Yeah. So, you know, in the past year, I'm sure you remember in the spring, there was this sort of huge spike in border crossings. It was the largest spike in a dozen years, really driven by, again, those families coming up from Central America and asking for humanitarian protection, asking for asylum. And the administration has come up with a whole host of policies to try to make it tougher for those people to apply for asylum, to then deter them from coming. And those, you know, whether or not you agree with the actual policy levers, some people think that they're extremely blunt, unnecessary, maybe even cruel, but they've been effective in achieving what the administration wants, which is lowering border crossings. And they've dropped about 75% since they peaked in May. Probably the single most effective of those policies is something that the administration is calling the Migrant Protection Protocols, what we call Remain in Mexico. And what it basically says is if you cross the border, the Border Patrol returns you to Mexico and asks you to wait there for several months while you are going through the immigration court system, while your asylum case is being heard. And the cases where the cities where people are being returned on the Mexican side of the border are some of the most dangerous cities in Mexico. And we have heard reports of people being kidnapped, you know, within hours of being returned back from the Border Patrol, of people being extorted for huge amounts of money, people being abused. And about 50% of people that are returned to Mexico are actually just dropping their asylum cases and going home because it's so dangerous for them.
We spoke earlier about how building a wall was a key component of President Trump's 2016 campaign. Is he adjusting the messaging as we now look ahead to the 2020 election?
You know, in his campaign speeches, he talks about building the wall. He talks about the success he's had. You know, he touts those lower border crossing numbers. That's really the metric he judges himself by. You know, he bills his presidency as a success. But at the same time, it's interesting. He does this sort of two-handed thing. And I think his surrogates do the same thing where they say, look how much we've succeeded. And I think in some places he've even said, we've cut illegal immigration in half. But at the same time, they're, you know, also saying, this is still a crisis. You know, once they've solved it, but it's still a crisis. And we need to reelect the president to make sure that he solves the crisis.
Wall Street Journal reporter Michelle Hackman joining me from Washington. Thank you so much, Michelle.
Thank you.
And finally, put a cork in it. That's what younger drinkers are doing with wine. Americans drank less wine last year, and it was the first time wine consumption has dropped since 1994. That's according to industry tracker IWSR. They say it's because millennials are starting to outnumber baby boomers, and wine's no longer at the top of their drinks list. Our Sabra Chowdhury explains.
Millennials have kind of very different taste preferences. For one thing, they just drink less alcohol overall. And when they do drink, hard seltzers have been a big one that they've been gravitating towards. We've seen big rises in non-alcoholic beer, things like mezcal, tequila, bourbon, Irish whiskey, Japanese whiskey, all those kind of smoky, quite strong flavors, some of them spicy, which is why you see mezcal rising in popularity. And kind of wine industry experts say the wine industry hasn't really kept pace. It hasn't innovated the way that a lot of cocktails have kind of changed. Flavor profiles have changed. The wine industry has kind of stayed a little bit flat. And so that seems to be part of the problem.
The trend is prompting the industry to react. Winemakers are rethinking their packaging and divesting more of their brands. And that's what's news for this Monday afternoon. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.